Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to KSFR's very own Dal Dearman about public radio, about KSFR. Right now, I would like to welcome Daria Peterson. She is with Impact Personal Safety, located right here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
So let's just start with the basics. What is Impact Personal Safety?
We're a nonprofit organization that empowers people to live safer lives by teaching defense against verbal, physical, and sexual assault.
And so there's a lot of different ways that that is taught. What are some of the techniques that you use for that?
Well, if I can describe the program in full a little bit, we co-teach, and the roles tend to fall along gender lines. So as the female lead in a class, I coach, I talk about concepts, I demo things, and the guy, the suited instructor, he acts both as a regular instructor and as a mock assailant. So he recreates...
Now, when you say suited, you mean he's wearing a big, huge, padded suit that no matter how hard you hit it, he won't get hurt.
Exactly. It's huge. He looks like a 300-pound football player when he puts it on, even if he's a pretty normal guy underneath it. Yeah. So that enables our students to experience a realistic scenario in a safe and positive way, where I'm coaching them through it, they have everybody supporting them, and they get to experience that.
Now, you said verbal, what did you say, verbal, physical, and sexual abuse?
A sexual assault, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so let's start with verbal abuse. How do you teach people to prevent that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's one of the most exciting things that Impact does. These recreated assault scenarios don't just start with somebody throwing a punch. Most assaults start with a verbal component and boundaries being crossed slowly. So if I'm... Let's see. If I'm at the gas station, it's very unlikely that someone's going to just come up behind me and suddenly I'm going to be in a fight. It's much more likely that someone will approach me, get really close, start saying inappropriate things, and all of those things can be addressed with my verbal skills well before a physical interaction has to start.
Now, I would imagine that in such an altercation, that the person who is the assailant, so to speak, is kind of testing you.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. We refer to it as an interview process. Is this person...
They're interviewing you.
Exactly.
To see if you're a victim.
If I'm a good victim, and if I am able to identify that they're crossing my boundaries and say no to it, I can very easily prevent an assault by doing that. So that's one of the most important things that we do at Impact.
What is... A typical scenario of an actual assault where a woman lets somebody cross her boundaries?
Let's see. For example, just in the workplace, I have a coworker. This is not true, but say I have a coworker and he tells inappropriate jokes. They're about sex or they're about women or something that makes me feel uncomfortable. So my boundary is being crossed and that guy doesn't even know it. Necessarily. He might not be doing it to make me feel uncomfortable. So that happens all the time. Somebody who borrows your car and doesn't fill it up with gas
or borrows your car and gets a DWI and calls you and bailed him out of jail. That happened to me.
Oh, really? That sounds pretty awful. So there are lots of little ways in which people in our everyday lives can cross our boundaries. And then strangers who can cross our boundaries can do it by, again, saying inappropriate things, suggesting inappropriate things, yelling at us in various situations, things like that.
And so here I am now, I'm going to take an Impact class, and you are teaching me how to prevent those things or how to nip them in the bud.
Mm-hmm.
What do you actually teach?
So I'm going to describe various techniques, how they might be things like you have permission to lie in this situation. You can deflect. Oh, I just saw a police officer right over there. Or there are security cameras right there.
What do you mean permission to lie?
It's very important that if your safety is being threatened, you can lie.
Like what?
Like, no, I'm not from around here. I have no idea where that Cirillos Road is. Something like that. My name is Deborah.
Wouldn't that make you more vulnerable to say I'm not from around here?
It depends on the situation. If it would make me feel safer, if it's something that I think would work with this particular assailant, that's what I'm going to do. And again, there's no magic formula, so that's what makes the male instructors, the suited instructors, so important, is they create a character, and you have to figure out what this character needs to hear in order to leave, in order to leave you alone.
So we're talking about, it seems like there's a kind of continuum from verbal abuse to potential physical violence.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people, they don't really have any intention to do you physical harm, but they still want to, for some reason, yell at you verbally.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on in those transactions? I mean, I would imagine that it's about their own lives and their own problems, and they're choosing you to kind of take it out on a stranger, or you even a member of a colleague in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. And presenting yourself as somebody who won't get emotional with them, somebody who won't create an argument with them, is the best way to go, and is really hard for some of us.
Yeah.
For some of us to not escalate with that person. So it's another important way to stay safe.
So let's say that you're in the workplace, going back to the example of somebody's telling you inappropriate, kind of disgusting jokes or jokes that are demeaning to women. What do you say?
I say, coworker, it makes me really uncomfortable when you tell jokes like that. I need you to stop. And then go from there. Yeah, I should have told you earlier, you know, if he's getting offended or defensive. I could have told you earlier. I was kind of embarrassed to say anything. I didn't want to hurt your feelings. We talk about little ego boosters after giving the very clear message that they need to stop.
What do you mean by ego boosters?
Little things like, yeah, I wanted to tell you, but, and again, coming back to an I statement, I felt uncomfortable. I didn't know what to say.
And that boosts their ego?
It does boost their ego. It makes it clear that it's not about them, that you, I wouldn't say you're such scum for saying things like that about women, because then I'm blaming them. But if I own it, that it's just, if it's, I can just pretend it's my problem that I don't like those awful jokes.
Now, what about reacting with humor?
Do you have an example?
Well, I mean, just saying, you know, I mean, you are so much grosser than Eric Cartman.
You know, we, so many of us already have skills like this that we've developed over our lives to deal with uncomfortable situations, and that sounds like a great tool to use. We are giving another option that people might not yet have, and if that's working for you, that's awesome.
Now, do you teach impact personal safety skills only to women?
No, we teach children, teens, women, men, people with disabilities, and our elders. And each population has various strengths that we can really take advantage of in each kind of class.
What are the strengths of women? Adult women come to a class, they feel maybe disempowered because we don't have the physical strength of our male counterparts.
Well, we don't have the upper body strength, but we certainly have a great deal of power in our hips and our core. So we really take advantage of that strength by stepping in with any upper body strikes that we do, really powering them from the bottom, and then we use lots of kicks and things like that that are really taking advantage of that.
Have you or do you know people who have ever had to actually use the physical part of what they learned in impact personal safety out in real life?
I don't personally. I hear it's the statistics we say are that 98% of our graduates stay safe by using their awareness skills and their verbal skills and their boundary setting skills. And then the second 2% use one or two strikes. It is almost unheard of to have a full-on fight.
And those very small percentage who do use the one or two strikes, mm-hmm. do they generally get what they're, you know, do they succeed?
Yes. That, I'm sorry that I didn't express that. It's one or two strikes and the guy is running away.
So I would imagine that they run away maybe because it hurts and maybe because they're just so surprised.
I think surprise is a really important element of self-defense. Absolutely. The other thing about them running away is that assailants, in general, are not looking for a fight. They're looking for a victim. So if I give someone an eye strike, which is using my fingers to poke them in the eyeball, they probably aren't going to stick around to see if I have a really good knee to the groin to follow that up, right?
Which you do.
Which I do. I wish they would stick around. Yeah. So that's going to keep me safe. Just surprising them, even yelling, would keep me safe if he were to approach me that closely.
What are some of the strengths, let's go through the whole list of everybody, that children have that mm-hmm. they bring to maybe precarious situations?
Well, I think one of the coolest things about children is that they don't have any social obligation to talk to people who aren't in their family. So they can keep themselves safe by never entering a conversation with a stranger, and it's not necessarily a rude thing. It means that the stranger is the one being persistent or strange in that situation, so they can get to safety. The other thing that is wonderful to take advantage of with children is how good they are at identifying things they don't like. I think that they are, I've noticed that they're profoundly good at figuring out when somebody is making them uncomfortable, and they aren't always invited to express that. So we have a whole section of our kids course that's dedicated to, in very simple ways, them getting an opportunity to give a hand back when one of us, say, touch their shoe and say, that's not okay with me, you need to stop.
Is there, and I say this because of a personal experience that I had, a way of over-teaching the boundary violation when there was no boundary violation going on at all? For the reason I say this is because, I forget if I've told this story before on the air, but about 4 years ago, I was in the supermarket, mm-hmm. and there was this 12-year-old girl who was blocking the aisle, and I kind of nudged her on the shoulder, rather than saying, because she had her back turned to me, so rather than like yelling, hey, get out of the way, I just sort of nudged her shoulder. And within about 2 minutes, her mother came to me, read me the riot act, and said that I was touching her daughter. Mm. And she yelled at me in a lot of the language that they teach in Impact personal safety, like, you know, like as if I'd traversed a boundary. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't. I just nudged the girl so she'd get out of the way. And she did get out of the way. And she had clearly learned in school to go report to mommy, or learned in Impact, uh-huh. if anybody, quote unquote, touched her. And so her mother treated me as if I was a child molester.
Yeah, that sounds like an awful situation to be in.
Oh, God.
Ugh. Children are pretty good at differentiating various situations if you make it clear what is inappropriate, if you let them decide. So we have this role-playing scenario. And I will say, who should I pretend to be? And they'll say, my babysitter, my neighbor. And then I'll say, I'm going to pretend that that you don't like when I touch your shoe or when I pull on your ponytail. And you can tell me, and then we have the script for them. So it's premised on the fact that they don't like it. They pretend they don't like it. They pretend it makes them uncomfortable. So that's really what's key in the whole situation, I think, that makes it different. And of course, we do the reporting at the end of that interaction. They report to their pretend parent in the class. And it is up to the parent's discretion whether or not to do anything about it. If they think it's a situation like the one you were in where, well, get over it, she told you to get out of the way when you were blocking the aisle, then they wouldn't have to do anything about it. It sounds like the mom in that situation didn't really get a clear picture from the girl's reporting of what actually happened.
Well, the bigger issue is, you know, we have in the city of Santa Fe, we're somewhere between a big city and a village, and in the village ethic, children do talk to strangers because the strangers are known to be protective people, and in the big city ethic, they don't talk to them because they're all potential assailants. Mm-hmm. And that's a really different way of seeing the world and teaching children to see the world.
Yeah. I like the distinction that we make at Impact. If you're with a parent if you're not with a parent. If you're with a parent, if they're paying attention to you, if you feel their presence, then you guys get to decide together who you talk to. And it's when children are alone that the distinction goes away, and that in order to stay safe, they need to not talk to strangers.
Right. And even that, I mean, you know, people who, I've known parents who moved with their small children to, for example, Peru, and they were so happy because they didn't have to watch their children all the time because the village ethic was in place.
Yeah. And it's difficult for us to give subtle distinctions.
Yeah.
Especially because we teach children from 6 to 12, and as they get older, they perhaps are more capable of learning those subtleties. So we hope that parents will encourage the development of their children's intuition, the sense of whether or not this person is someone I should be talking to.
We're talking to Daria Peterson of Impact Personal Safety. So what are some of the strengths when you teach senior classes? Okay, so seniors maybe are more fragile, have lost some of their body strength. What are some of the strengths that they bring to self-defense?
Yeah, I think that their verbal skills, because they've had the most time here, are really incredible. A lot of them already know so many of the strategies that they can use, and they employ them really quickly and well during our classes. And there are also some physical strikes that we can show them that don't require as much balance or strength. And honestly, self-defense coming from a senior is such a surprise that it's really going to catch a potential assailant off guard.
Are there a lot of people who do perpetrate violent assault on seniors?
In nursing homes especially, we
really
hear a lot about it. Yeah, a lot of abuse.
What kind of scenarios? Like strangers coming into nursing homes?
No, like the nursing staff.
Oh,
being abusive and it not being nipped in the bud with strong verbal boundaries. Yeah.
Wow. So, okay, we've talked about children, women, seniors. What about teenagers?
Teens are some of my favorite to teach. We just had this great class in November, and we had 3 or 4 really strong teens. And what I loved about watching them was that they're developing physically, so they're sort of still getting into their bodies, figuring out just how strong they are. And they aren't encouraged really to set boundaries. And as soon as...
Girls, boys, both?
I'm speaking specifically of girls, because this class was a women's class, but I think both girls and boys don't really get that that's an okay thing to do. They want to not rock the boat. And it's so exciting to give them not only permission, but force them into situations in class where they have to practice it. And then suddenly they're so much more self-possessed and so much more powerful in their communication. They get louder. Just in opening and closing circle, they often have more eye contact during conversations with me. So I think it's just tapping into the women and men that they have potential to become.
I would think that, I mean, if I could have gone back and taken this course when I was 15, I would gladly and happily have done it, because those things really are not taught in, at least when I was in high school, maybe not now either, in mainstream society.
Well, we are in St. Mike's and at PrEP, and hopefully we're going to get into the Santa Fe public school system soon. We're always hoping to do more. But it is so important. Our mission is to prevent violence, and if we can get to people before they've been assaulted, then they never have to be.
Now, how do you teach a men's class?
It's quite similar to the women's class, but in general, and I'm speaking in generalities, if they don't work for you, please fill them in a different way. But in general, in our society, men are socialized to fight. Fight for their honor, fight for their country, fight for their family, fight, fight, fight. And at the core of that message is the message to protect what you love, protect those you love. And that's a great message. But what happens is men often can't step down from a fight. And so they're less likely to be in self-defense situations than they are just to be in a fight, where they appear, at least, to be a willing participant. So one of the most important things are, again, these assault scenarios with the suited male instructor, where he's yelling at them, trying to do whatever he can to get under their skin, and them trying to stay calm, trying to talk their way out of it, and only at the as a very last resort, getting into the physical altercation.
And so it's similar to what you do with the woman, but I would imagine that the learning curve is very different. So, I mean, for a woman, we certainly don't have to unlearn the fight response. We have to learn it.
Many women do, yeah. It's not automatic for us to step into a fight and get in the first strike. A lot of us want to step back or just
make it go away.
And many men are much more willing to step into the fight. So, yeah, that's a difference. But again, that's just generalities. And some women also have that impulse to allow themselves to get worked up into a fight. And some men are already very good at talking their way out of it and have kept themselves safe their whole lives by doing that.
So I would think that there would be way more of that in a context where alcohol is involved.
Mm.
Do you teach people how to speak to a drunken assailant specifically?
There are sometimes drunken assailants who come out on the mat. Every character is unique, and the guys have a lot of experience in creating characters who aren't good at hearing no, who aren't good at being talked down.
And yeah. So what do you do when, let's say you're a guy and you're at some bar and a drunken assailant thinks you've talked to his girl or something like that?
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. I wasn't talking to her. I'm not interested. I know she's your girl. I don't want to fight. I don't want any trouble. Yeah, let's just go our own ways. Things like that.
And that, does that work?
It does work. Yeah, especially I think what's important to know is that the words are about 7% of what people hear when they communicate. Body language and tone make up the rest of our communication. So if the body language is very calm and also very firm, and the tone of voice is very strong and very soothing, then those words can be very effective.
So part of what you're dealing with when you get into a situation where somebody is a potential assailant is you have a fight or flight response, you have a freeze response, you have adrenaline. What actually happens physically to the person,
yeah,
whether they be old, young, male, female, whatever?
Sure. Well, those are sort of two parts, the freeze response and the adrenaline response. When we get adrenalized, which is the body's natural response to situations of danger or fear, which is involved in fight or flight. Am I going to stay and fight, or am I going to run away probably faster than I ever have before? The body often freezes instead of doing either of those. And some of the things that we do to break the freeze response are yelling. So we yell the whole class, which is very cool and very powerful, one of the things I loved the most about my first class. and that forces breathing, which also breaks the freeze response. So doing things like that. And then in the adrenaline state, minor motor movement of fingers, things like that, and then logic kind of go out the window. So we're dealing with a very realistic state. If you were being assaulted, you would get adrenalized. So we're practicing what it would actually feel like.
So you actually get the people adrenalized by sort of running at them or yelling at them, so that I actually, in the class, am secreting adrenaline.
It's amazing. And as you, we have students who've taken several classes, and they say that they maybe get a little less adrenalized, or that they have better adrenaline management as they take more classes. But and within the class, they get better adrenaline management. But then the guys in the suits will up the ante. And just somebody entering your space like that and with an aggressive tone and aggressive body language adrenalizes you more than you might think.
And so you actually train people from their adrenalized response.
Mm-hmm. And things learned in the adrenaline state stay in the body. So when I learned how to swim or ride a bike, I was adrenalized, and those things are automatic now. If somebody pushed me off a boat, I wouldn't sink to the bottom wishing I'd had a lesson more recently, right? I would just start paddling and I'd come up and say, why'd you push me? And the same thing with the skills we teach, they're just automatic. People who have had to use their physical skills say that they started doing them before their mind even consciously knew what was happening.
We're talking to Daria Peterson about impact personal safety. So people, let's say 5 or even 10 years down the line, who took this class maybe as a teenager, as a young adult, When it comes time to use it, it's still there?
It's still there, yeah. So unlike a martial art, which is about discipline and moving up in rank, this is a one-time thing. You take one class, and then indefinitely you have these skills in your body.
There is a relationship. I mean, some of the actual skills come from martial arts.
Some of the physical skills do, yes. Yeah, we have a martial arts background back in the old days. And certainly a lot of respect for what martial arts do, but we are ultimately different because we're interested in being as effective in as short a time as possible to teach people self-defense.
Do you teach women what to do, especially young women, in date rape situations?
You remember earlier I was talking about those small boundaries being crossed? So, again, most assault situations don't instantly start. There's a progression of boundaries being crossed, any one of which can be pointed out and stopped, and that can stop it from going further. We don't currently put people in situations that are reenactments of that.
But the learning to halt, you know, nip it in the bud.
would prevent
date rape. Do you have people coming to you later and telling you how they used skills in situations like that, for example?
I haven't spoken to anyone in a date rape situation, but everyone from a class talks about setting boundaries with people in their everyday lives. Absolutely.
So you are working with something which is a safe haven program that some Santa Fe businesses are participating in?
Mm-hmm. The CCRC, which is the Coordinated Community Response Program. No, not program. What is it?
Something along those lines.
Yeah. Coordinated Community Response Council is a citywide effort to bring people together to prevent various kinds of violence. And Carol Horowitz, who is the domestic violence and sexual assault liaison for the Santa Fe Police Department and several others, came up with the idea of bringing together Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center and Esperanza Domestic Violence Shelter. And Impact is also involved. And various members of each organization do these trainings for businesses here in Santa Fe. And we talk about what domestic violence is, how to help someone who is in a domestic violence situation, and how to help victims of sexual assault. And so once one of these businesses has had this training, they can put a sticker in their window saying, basically, we are a safe haven for these people who need resources, and we can help them get this.
Has anybody used that? Has anybody ever come into one of these businesses that you've heard of? Or,
you know, I don't know. I tried to get in touch with David Rivers, who's the head of the organization, and I am very excited to find out if we know whether or not it's been used. Yeah,
I would think that if a critical mass of people in a group in a city actually did this and learned these skills, so there could be a really significant impact on violent crime and on abuse.
I sure think so. I think having those stickers in windows is a powerful symbol. The more you see them, the more you think there are safe havens, there are people who know what's going on with sexual assault and domestic violence in Santa Fe.
One of the other things I like about your website, which, by the way, is impactpersonalsafety.org, is that you really have a call out to men to be part of the movement against violence against women.
Yeah, it's so important. sexual violence is as much a men's problem as it is a women's problem. In general, men are the perpetrators, so they can prevent it better than, you know, just as well as a woman can.
And even the non-perpetrators can play a role.
Absolutely. They can decide to not condone it, to not condone things that are dismissive or abusive of women in subtle ways, and they can help recreate the culture such that it doesn't promote violence against women.
Daria Peterson is with Impact Personal Safety here in Santa Fe. Anything you want to add before we go?
Sure. I'd just like to say that in addition to the Safe Haven trainings, we also offer safety presentations that are free. They're about an hour long to businesses who'd like their employees to get a taste of what Impact does.
Daria, thank you so much for being here. And if people would like the phone number, it is 992-8833 here in the 505 area code in Santa Fe. And once again, impactpersonalsafety.org. We will see you soon.
Okay, thank you so much.
We're going to take a break right now. We will be right back. We'll be speaking to Dal Dearman in just a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Dal Dearman. He is the general manager of KSFR. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Mary Charlotte, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's great to have you.
And I'm hoping this inaugurates a new feature on a periodic basis here at the cafe, where you and I sit down and we talk about what people think about KSFR.
Well, this segment right now is not only something for you to listen to, but it's actually an invitation to see how much interest there is in having a segment, which is basically, what is it called? Ask the General Manager, about public radio. These are new times that we're living in. We're living in a new political era, and we're living in a new economic era. And the role of public radio, although it doesn't really change, can become even more important and vital during transitions and during, you know, let's face it, tough times. And so what are we doing well? What do you want KSFR to be? And what questions do you have is what we're putting out to our audience.
Yeah, that's kind of where we started this exercise. And I have always wanted to do something like this, where ideally, once we get it going, I hope we can do it with real input from all of your listeners and all of our listeners, who will gather their questions and either email them to you or me or both. And maybe once a month, we'll see how it works. We will sit down here and we'll answer them. And this being the first, of course, we have no questions from the audience. We do have some questions from each other and for each other, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the idea of this really is KSFR is, as a public radio station, serving a variety of communities and really one community in terms of the values that most of us share, is very much committed, has been for a long time, to community outreach. We want to understand what people are thinking out there about their lives and other issues that are important to the community that we can reflect in our programming. And we want, frankly, to know what they think about the good and the bad right here on 101.1 FM every day. So this is about another tool of outreach. That's how I see it. And I'm hoping that people will just jump on that and tell me, or tell you, and we'll talk about it together once a month, what is important to them, what we can do more of, what you think we ought to do less of, and just be honest about it. And we will, as best I can, as the general manager, as very best I can, give you a candid answer to your question. That's
and
the premise.
The email is radiocafe@ksfr.org, radiocafe@ksfr.org. That's my email, and I'd pass things right along to Dal, and we would talk about them.
And if you want to complain about Mary Charlotte, you can email me directly at dal@ksfr.org.
Dal is spelled
D-A-L.
D-A-L.
Yeah.
Well, people complain to me about me.
And me, I'm sure.
No, they don't. I've never gotten a complaint on my show, on my email about you, but I get occasional little complaints, and I have to say, just in general, I love getting feedback from listeners one way or the other, what shows interested them, what shows made them think differently, or what they liked, or whatever. So,
and you know, one of the things about public radio and local public radio, which is the essence of who we are, and what you do every day really is all about trying to be something different. Let's just say this, something different than, let's say, Fresh Air on NPR, which is a consistently a very good national program with Terry Gross, this isn't the cafe, and yet the cafe, which was once born many years ago as 99% let's just talk about Santa Fe, and today it is so much more diverse than that.
That's right.
How do we set that apart from the other national things you can hear? That's one of the things we think about and we work on a regular basis, is what makes local programming important? What makes our particular perspectives about what's happening here in our community and what's happening here that matters to our community elsewhere in the world? How do we add all that up and create a balance that appeals to more people than not who are not served by traditional commercial radio?
Well, for example, there is occasionally some overlap between people who are on my show and who are on Amy Goodman's show. Mm-hmm. But, and sometimes, on some occasions, it's been on the same day, you know, and who knew? But I actually make an effort not to do that too much, because I think that, I mean, we air Amy Goodman twice a day, Democracy Now!, at 6 in the morning and again at 3 in the afternoon. And why should I do what she does?
Right.
If she's covering the Middle East in the way that she does, or if she's covering certain corporate or political scandals in the way she does, is there anything that I can add to that? And often there's not. So, Amy, have at it. I'm going to do something different.
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes there is. I mean, sometimes there absolutely is, on a national or international issue, a local perspective that is more insightful than where you might, I mean, than in many other communities around the country, which makes this public radio station and those who contribute to it, contribute their voices and their opinions to it, really important. And that's something the Radio Cafe takes, and many of our other programs take into account. How do we localize an issue, or how do we find perspectives that really are worth hearing here about those larger issues?
Now, for example, I have my foreign correspondent, Bill Burke White, about once a month, and he's not local, and he's not talking about anything local, but I think because he has one of the most clear minds and has such a balanced perspective, not just right and left, but the balance of multiple perspectives, I have him on.
Mm-hmm. I want to say, I'm going to interrupt a couple of times during our conversation this morning to say that this is not what we intend Ask the Manager to be.
Okay.
Because you haven't asked us yet. And we really do want your input. We really do want you to say to me or to Mary Charlotte in your email or by whatever means, a letter, good old-fashioned way, to Post Office Box 31366. It's on the website and a variety of places you can get that address too. And ask us. So we're responding to you. Right now we're responding to each other. And we like each other a lot, and that'll be fun. But it's not the plan long term. But to your point about who, how we distinguish ourselves, it's very much to me a matter of, let's do whatever we do as well as we possibly can. And I really believe, having been part of this organization now for the last 7 years, and you have certainly, that we've gotten...
7 years.
Yeah, 7 darn years, yep. And...
Heck.
Heck, yeah. I think we should probably bake a cake or something.
For my birthday.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sure, it's all about you, I know. But it's also all about me, so... Why are we even on the radio? Let's just go to lunch.
No, 7 years, yes. Continuing the thought.
Yes, the thought was that we've learned to be good at some things, and I know that we are good at some things, and we can enumerate some of them. The news, for example. I know that there was not, and there still is not, a reliable, real news outlet that you can listen to. I don't mean read, listen to, wherever you are, here in northern New Mexico, every hour, and hear the latest. KSFR has proven it can be done, it can be done well, and we've gotten the awards and the support from listeners to prove that. Speaking of which, here's something that I think our news department does really well. It's not my issue, it's Bill Dupuis, the news director, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. But interestingly, in Bill's blog, which you can also read at ksfr.org, right column, go down about halfway, it says read the news director's blog. One of the things that's really bothering the heck out of him in the last month is this seeming new
trend.
I hope not, but it seems like a trend. We can't talk to the media. And there are a couple of great examples of that that our news department ran into.
We being organizations
we
out there.
We organizations, the government, other than the government, who suddenly have a policy of we don't talk to the media. And two really wacky examples are there was a representative of the FCC in town within the last month who was going to hold a public discussion of the changeover to of converter, the need for converter boxes to change old TVs to the new digital format, which if you don't have one of those and you have an old TV, sometime in February you're going to be without a TV altogether. Well, nobody showed up for the hearing, the public discussion in Santa Fe, except one of our reporters. The representative of the FCC was there.
Now, the FCC is the Federal Communications Commission, which regulates the media themselves.
And which is a taxpayer, you know, funded agency. One of our reporters said, well, nobody else is here. Let's talk about what it is that is important for people to know. The response was, no, we can't talk to the media. Ha ha! I couldn't believe it.
It's
Bill
madness.
Couldn't believe it.
It's madness.
Yeah.
Especially since with something so completely innocuous and apolitical as changing your getting a converter box, you would think that if they talked to the media, they would get the information out there and their mission of coming here in the first place would be accomplished.
You haven't heard innocuous yet. The next example, and the only other one I'll give today is, and Bill certainly can do much more justice to this than me, is when the Rail Runner was being introduced with much hoopla, and I personally think it is a wonderful thing. There was an opportunity for one of our reporters to ask some really simple question, the equivalent of which, this is not the question, but the equivalent of which was, what time's the next train? Okay? And he was identified as a member of the media, a KSFR reporter, in which case the conductor, whomever it was, said, I'm sorry, we can't, it's the equivalent of, I'm sorry, we can't tell the media that. And yet, if anybody who wasn't a member of the media had been there, it would have been more, was it 4:30, you know?
Right.
So they can't tell the
media what time the train leaves, but they can tell an individual.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
And it seems to be spreading, and it is loathsome in terms of open communication and the role of the media, which, of course, most of us still remember, is to be a check on, part of the checks and balances of this democratic system.
And simply providing information so that we have an open society and a transparent government.
Mm-hmm.
How does transparency occur? Transparency is a funny metaphor because it's sort of, you know, it's the metaphor of a piece of glass that you can see through. But what it really means is having the information there rather than hidden. And so how does it get there? Through the media.
That's right.
How else does it get there?
I mean, it's the natural, it's why we're here. So that's another example, and I don't want to dwell on that, as I said, because it is the news department's purview. But in terms of the kind of thing we'd like to do here, we'd like to do, the two of us, maybe once a month if that works out, is to explore some of those issues, but issues that matter to you because you've told us they do. And there are a variety of things I can tell you about programming plans for 2009. We're making plans to make the absolute most we can, given what every nonprofit in Santa Fe and around the country, I'm sure, has already said on your show last week, Mary Charlotte, is going to be a difficult year because the funding is not what it was just a year ago. We were so spoiled during the last couple of glory years of New Mexico's oil and gas riches, and yes, the legislature had extra money and we got a little bit of that, and foundations were doing well with their investments, and frankly, all of us are seeing cutbacks. What are we going to do about that? I'll tell you what we're going to do about that from my perspective right now. As little as possible to hurt the product that we put out every day for all of you. And what does that mean? It means that we're going to have to make some cuts, but we're going to make as many invisible cuts as we possibly can. We're going to do some things that we can restore, hopefully, when the time is right to restore them. But for the next year, we, like everybody else in Santa Fe and elsewhere, need to be careful about more careful than ever about how we spend our donors' money. And believe us when we say that's what we think about day in and day out. So there's that issue. From my own personal perspective, from a programming standpoint, I would really like to even more seriously address our need, I believe, as a community radio station now available in a variety of towns and outside of towns throughout all of northern New Mexico because of our improved signal on 101.1. I'd like to be able to reach out to really underserved communities more than ever, be they Native American, be they Hispanic. You know, there is the stereotype of who a public radio listener is, and the stereotype is a stereotype for a reason, because it's largely true. We don't want to be the stereotype. We've never wanted to be the stereotype. Yes, we want to serve, and for those who don't know, it's, you know, it's more educated, more money coming into the household, those kinds of things. That's wonderful, you know, and
I think, you know, I'm going to interrupt you. I think there's some truth to that, but I don't think it's true across the board. I have met a whole bunch of people who listen to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe who are tradesmen, nurses, workers of various kinds who do not fit the that sort of, what would you call it?
Here I am, stereotype.
I'm sipping, as we speak, I'm sipping a latte, but that latte is sipping, you know, elitist liberal.
I'm just drinking plain black coffee.
Not me. I'm drinking latte with chocolate on it. But anyway, that don't fit that stereotype. And I like to think it's because we actually do such a variety of things that there's kind of something for everybody.
You know, somebody made the analogy to me, and they've made it more than once. Here we are broadcasting this program, and we have been doing it for years and years from the Santa Fe Baking Company. And the baking company is a terrific analogy, because I think. Because it is any day you walk in here, it is a cross section of people from all over the place.
Every social class, race, local and non-local.
And they interact freely, and they interact without any judgment about, well, you're you and I'm me, and maybe we're not, you know, whatever. And that's the kind of environment we'd like the radio. We do like the radio cafe to be, and we would like the overall view you have at the end of the week about KSFR programming to be inclusive, and we're going to be as much more inclusive in 2009 as we possibly can. So those are some things that are top of mind with me, but you know, that's just me, and that's just me saying today's a good day to roll this idea out, which we've been talking about for a year. But you know, I really want to know what's on everybody else's mind.
Now, when we encourage you to write in to radiocafe@ksfr.org for the Ask the General Manager session segment on this show, which we hope will be about once a month or so, we are not asking for a nasty, complaining, vitriolic, venomous, that kind of session. We would like to have really genuine, thoughtful questions as opposed to, I can't stand it when you... You know, and even if you have that opinion, if you could word it in such a way that we actually can read it on the air, that would be very nice.
Yes, it would. And yet, as much as you say that, and I agree with you that civility has always been, I think, an important aspect of how we deliver whoever's message it is we deliver, or have a dialogue about. It isn't that I want to, and I don't at all want to discourage dissent. I don't want to discourage somebody who thinks that they're underrepresented or thinks that we're totally off base about something. And I know there are people out there. I hear it all the time.
Who think we're off base about. Yeah, well, write to us.
Sure. Write to us. Let us know. And we'll talk about it. And we'll talk about it in a mostly civil way, unless I've had too much caffeine, in which case I might become incredibly obnoxious. But I try not to.
I would like to also say there is this question of underserved communities, which has become kind of a buzzword, and there are all sorts of different communities. I would like to also, at the same time, say that we are one community, and the extent to which we really need to draw together as one community, where things like the environment are concerned, we're all breathing the same air and drinking the same water, and we are the human community. We are the New Mexican community. We are the high desert dwellers who are all affected equally by global warming to a very large extent, for example. And that's, you know, so we are all one community to be served, and I think that's part of how I see the job of radio.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think that, you know, this is not some... abstract intellectual exercise by any means that let's just show everybody how smart we are. It's really about being, as I said, inclusive before, and I really do mean that. It's let's think about all the various things that make for quality of life. Quality of life based on the values that these communities here in the Southwest, quality of life and the most general human principles And as I say all those things, the first thing I think to myself is, boy, I'm being an intellectual jerk right now.
No.
So okay, I want to move off of this for a minute and say something.
Not, and also, intellectualism is a good thing. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, fine. I want to move off of this for a minute and say something which I'm very, as general manager, but also as a friend of yours, very proud of, that you're going to take a month this summer and not be here at the Radio Cafe.
But you will hear me because I'm still going to be broadcasting shows, but I won't
actually
be here.
And every once in a while, Robert, not and I, if we don't like the show, Perry will actually take over damn show and do whatever we want. But you're taking June because you have been selected for a very, I think, big honor. And I was going to come on here and say, and be kind of cagey about it and say, well, what's the language that doesn't have any plurals and doesn't have any tenses to its verbs and is the easiest to learn language in the... Yes, Indonesian. And why would anybody want to learn that? Maybe because they're going to...
Bali. I have been given the honor to be part of the Bali art program. And I will be studying Balinese music, dance, and art for a month, which
on
is very
a
wonderful
scholarship.
On a scholarship with this very wonderful organization called Bali Art Project. So I am delighted, and this, I guess, has come about sort of indirectly through the radio. So with great gratitude and love, I will be taking a little bit of time off from my beloved audience.
And we are very proud. This is next June. We are very proud. I am personally very proud. And the only thing that worries me a little bit is when I said to Mary Charlotte yesterday, when she told me, maybe you'd have some material for your show, she said, what?
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Dal Dierman is the general manager. We're starting this segment, we hope, called Ask the General Manager. And if you have questions,
everybody
you can write to...
Everybody loves somebody sometime.
Stop it. We're almost out of time. You can write to radiocafe@ksfr.org. And you can also leave a message at 428-1528. So, thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan presents the monthly Women in Jazz Hour. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.